Hello, and welcome to this walking tour of historic 25th Street, one of the most notorious streets in America. My name is Katie Nelson. I'm a historian and co-host of What's Her Name podcast, but I'm also a proud Ogdenite, and I'm so excited to share some of our local history with you. This tour starts at the base of 25th Street, so if you're not there already, press pause and get yourself in front of Union Station. Before we get going, let me tell you a quick story about the wild origins of 25th Street. Feel free to take a seat on the edge of that big fountain there if you want, or stay standing. Looking east toward the mountains, imagine this view before 1869. You would have been looking at a big stretch of nothing, except a few scattered farms in the distance. This was the outskirts of a tiny Mormon settlement called Ogden. But out there in the world, something big was brewing. The Central Pacific Railroad from the West Coast and the Union Pacific from the East Coast were racing across America. They finally met at Promontory, nearby. But geography and a little bit of scheming by the Mormon prophet Brigham Young brought the official junction of the railroads right here. Almost overnight, Ogden became the crossroads of America, where every cross-country train stopped for all passengers to change lines. 119 trains a day came here. Ogden became a melting pot like the American West had never seen. Native Americans, who were here first, were living alongside Mormon farmers, mostly from Britain and Scandinavia. Then the trains roared into town, bringing thousands of railroad workers, immigrants from China and Ireland, and African Americans, many of whom were former slaves. In the chaos of this wild street, you can witness the story of America. Ogden became a city of immense diversity, a wild rebel city right smack in the middle of Mormon Utah. And it never let a little thing like the law interfere with business. It soon became known as Notorious Two-Bit Street. The street was numbered 25, and 25 cents was 2 bits back in the day. Get it? 25th Street is where America's adventure seekers piled in, and where our anything-goes attitude created a street wholly unexpected and notoriously free. So let's go then. Let's take a stroll down this infamous street, like every railroad passenger would have back then. We'll start on the north side and come back down on the south side. From here, you'll need to use the crosswalk on Wall Avenue to get to the north side of 25th Street. That's on your left. Go ahead and cross the street when you get the green light, stopping at the corner on the other side. Wall Avenue actually got its name from the old wall of one of the original Mormon forts built here in the 1850s before any city was here. The real estate on the corner we're heading toward has always been prime. Easiest to get to out of the station. Today, it's a newish brick building. But back in 1878, it was the George Ford Company, dealer in hides and pelts. By the year 1900, hides and pelts were out, and hotels were in. It became the Healy Hotel, a swanky, three-story sandstone and brick Victorian with a marble lobby and fancy chandeliers. There's a large historical plaque here on the corner if you look around. It shows what the Healy Hotel used to look like. One of my favorite stories about the Healy Hotel is about the restaurant inside, the arcade restaurant. It was said to have furnishings unequaled in splendor, they said. But do you know how they got them? A restaurant in Salt Lake City went bankrupt in 1899 after they had a gruesome murder in one of their private dining rooms. So the Healy Hotel bought them out. That's Ogden. Too grim for you, Salt Lake City? We'll take it. Okay, keep going east down the street. You'll see a long building that now houses the Gift House. That's Ogden's oldest pawn shop. Very authentic vibes in there. In 1893, it was three shops. The first store was W.H. Watts Barber. The next shop, as you walk along, was Isaac Clark's Candy Shop, and then Henry Garvos Grocer. Now look up. You'll see that the shop fronts become two stories tall and that three in a row all match. Now they're covered in a kind of beige stucco, but back then these buildings were all saloons. I bet you could hear them from here. You'd really be spoiled for choice. Are you more of an O.L. Lucen saloon type of person? Or maybe you're more of the Grand Saloon crowd? Or maybe your crew is in the Colorado Coffee House? Maybe you'd just bounce from one to the next, or follow your ear to the loudest honky-tonk piano. Today, the Two-Bit Street Cafe here is carrying the banner. It still has its antique bar inside and things like cactus on the menu. You might also notice that blue tile flanking the doors here, and you can see the old sign for the Roosevelt Hotel. That was a facelift these shop fronts got in the 1950s and 60s when there was a mid-century modern hotel in these buildings. When you're ready, keep going. The last shop front in this block of buildings looks a bit different. It's still two stories, but you can see the original brickwork. And it's especially cool up top with its decorative brick frieze. This building housed hotels on the top floor and two restaurants on the bottom floor, the Chung Tom Chinese Restaurant and the U.S. Cafe. Now, we know that Chinese opium dens were a regular part of railroad life and therefore Ogden. Sometimes we can know details about which shops were fronts for opium, but we can't always be sure. Was the Chung Tom restaurant and its U.S. cafe really an opium den? I'm gonna say very likely. Next up the street, a vacant lot. A strange square of nothingness in this otherwise bustling street, right? Imagine here instead two buildings, each with fantastic stories. In the west half of the lot, imagine the swankiest of swanky hotels. Here stood Chapman House, a gorgeous building with 30 rooms and a classy restaurant. It was established in 1874 by William Chapman as the high-class accommodation for America's millionaires passing through. Railroad tycoons, English cattle barons, German princes, ultra-famous celebrities. A list of people who stayed here would be a miniature history of the American West. A man known only as French Pete ran the place. He loved fine art and fine dining, and he tried his best to drag 25th Street out of the gutter and give Ogden some polish. To give you a sense of his ambitions, let me read you a menu from his restaurant. Turtle soup, mountain trout, Columbia River salmon, San Francisco oysters, antelope steak, shoulder of venison, beef Chicago, breast of sage hen, prairie chicken and cream, quail, mourning doves, Canada goose, southern candied yams, potatoes O'Brien, hot biscuits, corn pone, honey, watermelon, peaches and cream, plus champagne by the half gallon. Now, all this was served in the French style, meaning this isn't a menu you choose from. You're expected to eat all of this in one meal. This is Ogden at its finest. Farther up, see that old painted beer ad that says Drink Pabst? On this side of that wall was a brothel, run by a very famous woman we call Gentile Kate. She was the first in a long line of madams who reigned over 25th Street. She built a massive fortune running a house of prostitution, much to the disapproval of the Mormon leader Brigham Young. Their rivalry has become the stuff of legend, as Brigham Young tried and tried to shut down Gentile Kate, but she always emerged victorious. Kate was so early in Ogden's story that we don't know much about her for sure, but one legend has stood the test of time. Ogdenites still tell how, when Brigham Young died, she purchased his most ostentatious carriage, the most elaborate carriage in the territory. Look toward the street and imagine Gentile Kate sitting atop the carriage, parading it down 25th Street, waving to passersby, and reveling in the victory of brothel madam over Mormon prophet. The story's not likely true, but the fact that this story, above all others, is what the people have clung to as an encapsulation of the life of Gentile Kate tells us quite a lot about the way Ogden has framed its own rebel past. Head toward the next block of buildings. Notice how these next few shop fronts are all one stubby story and all the same red brick. Look how each storefront has rosettes across a low frieze above the door, and they're all the same. That's because this was once one large three-story Victorian building that housed a bunch of companies and, of course, a saloon. The building was later devastated by a fire, and only the bottom floor was salvaged. You can see how now they all have a slab of modern cement as a roof instead of the second floor that used to be there. But at least we've still got the Beer Historic Place sign. Can you see it? It's a pretty nice way to sum up 25th Street. The sign is especially appropriate because during the years of Prohibition, the street was practically exploding with speakeasies and bootleggers. In fact, Utah outlawed alcohol 2.5 years before the federal government did. So Ogden kind of got a head start on illegal booze. Some of these shops still have remnants of the Prohibition days in their basements, like antique barrels cemented into hiding places. This was, indeed, a historic place for beer. Next, you'll see a tall red building, the Windsor Hotel. And the next building after that was the Ogden Beer Hall, and then another hotel. Keep strolling down to the corner and across Lincoln Avenue over to the next block. While you're walking, I'll tell you that the 1930s were a heyday for organized crime in Ogden. Today, we love to repeat the old legend that the famous gangster Al Capone refused to stay in Ogden because it was too dangerous, even for the likes of him. That, too, probably never happened. But the spirit of the legend is clear. Notorious Two-Bit Street was living up to its name. All the major vices, alcohol, gambling, drugs, prostitution, they ran 25th Street like a well-oiled machine. And, surprisingly, it may just be all this organized crime that saved Ogden from the Great Depression. Harmon Peary, our young, savvy mayor in the 30s, he decided to license all the criminal operations, and the tax dollars rolled in. So now you should be looking at the next block of 25th Street. You'll see right on the corner a pretty cool pent-cornered brick building. It was built in 1900. First it was a train ticket office, but soon it housed, surprise, surprise, a brewery, the Zongfu Brewing Company. The next building is 3 stories tall, and you'll see up top a sign that says Gomer A. Nicholas, 1908. This was Gomer Nicholas's grocery store. Look how this building has those rosettes in the frieze above the door, just like those buildings a ways back. But this building still has its 3 stories. The next couple of shop fronts at 208 and 210, they have cool leaded glass windows from 1908. This was Jenkins Cigar Manufacturing Company, and the next door was the famous clothing store, and after that, New Process Laundry. Next, you see the Kokomo Club, and you can see how different it is, architecturally, from what you've seen so far. This is an icon of 1950s Ogden. The beat poet Jack Kerouac, he visited the Kokomo Club while he was on the road, and he had this to say about 25th Street. Let me put on my best beat poet voice. Then Ogden, which I dug, Jap hipsters, crazy bum street with Kokomo Bar, at foot of which white-capped mountains rise. A town I'd heard about some, I can see it's something. Before the 50s, back in the railroad heyday, there was a pretty cool business on this spot. Nels Sorensen's Jewelry and Shooting Gallery. I don't know how that worked. The next vacant lot was once home to the Central Hotel, Sanders and Geisen Bakers, and GNS Miigawaka, purveyors of Japanese imports. The next building, number 234, was the Alki Confectionery and the Owl Bar. In the 1970s and 80s, this was Yuke's Cafe, run by Mary Nikisihisi, a marvelous woman we called the Angel of 25th Street. She served meals for over a decade to anyone who needed them, regardless of whether they could pay. The next building, two-story brick, was once occupied by C.F. Cranch Retail Clothing, and upstairs, the Ann Bollinger Furnished Rooms. Brothel? Probably. The next three storefronts are all single-story brick. Now they're a bar, but back in the day they were the European Hotel, a three-story building that boasted 64 rooms, all steam-heated with electric lights, and frescoes on the walls and ceilings that were the state's finest. The hotel also offered sample rooms where traveling salesmen displayed their wares, which was apparently very exciting. But it was outside, right here, where you would have been really impressed. The hotel installed a mosaic tile map in the sidewalk, right here where you're standing. It was a map of the entire Western Hemisphere, with North and South America in pale colors and the ocean a deep blue. There was also a speakeasy in the basement, of course. This one had a feature that I love. The enterprising bootlegger Denny Smith had an electric button installed on the front desk so clerks could push it to open the secret locked door, letting only the right people in. I think this next building is pretty cool. Blue with a decorative frieze in pressed tin. This is the original facade from 1901. Facades like this were actually mail-ordered, assembled in a matter of days, the zenith of industrial convenience. It was the Joseph Rogerson Restaurant and the J.E. Davenport Saloon. Next, you'll see a narrow alley. This isn't just some alley. It was created in the 1890s by special arrangement between the Rogerson Restaurant and the ice cream parlor on the other side. It was the creation of Belle London, notorious madam. She wanted a quick and easy way for her customers to access the red light district, which lay directly behind these businesses. So, what are we waiting for? Let's head through the alley. As the alley opens up, you'll find yourself looking at the back of all the shops and restaurants on 25th. Looking to your left and your right, you'll see what remains of some of the access stairwells by which visitors would reach the rooms above and behind the businesses. This was where Ogden's ladies of the night plied their trade. But it wasn't just here. See that big parking lot in front of you, stretching all the way to your left and your right? This was Electric Alley, and it used to be chock full of buildings, subdivided into rooms just large enough for a bed. Each one a tiny house inhabited by a prostitute. Belle London came to Ogden in 1889 and built an empire here. She had the police in her pocket. She was deemed to be the most powerful person in Ogden. Some people even called her the Queen of the Underworld. She had an elaborate parlor house built for herself at about your 10 o'clock, and she ran a tight ship. She claimed that there were no drunks, robberies, or police calls on her watch. She paid for every girl to have a medical exam every 10 days. She had planned on building a hospital on site, and when new girls came to her for work, she offered instead to pay their fees to attend the state vocational school. Prostitution was then, as now, a controversial business, but Belle London claimed she was an advocate for women, offering stability and support in a world that never gave these misfits a fighting chance. Who were these misfit women, working here in their small rooms in Electric Alley? Sometimes, thanks to newspapers or lawsuits, we get glimpses at these otherwise anonymous women. See that little brick wall to the right that kind of separates the sidewalk from the parking lot? Go ahead and have a seat there while I tell you about some of the ladies who lived here. in her teens, Lizzie Sloan ran with a gang of cattle thieves, but she was captured and sent to Ogden's Ladies' Reform School. Apparently, reform school wasn't her style, and she ended up in Electric Alley. We know her story because she appeared in the paper after confessing to stabbing a hotel porter named Dick Kurth. But a reporter visited Lizzie Sloan in her jail cell and discovered the truth. She had confessed to save the true murderer, her lover James Wims, piano player at a local brothel. The reporter describes her as, quote, 24, blonde, and not bad looking, but of the lowest character, vile and corrupt. Lena Carter worked at number 6 Electric Alley. According to the local paper, she had a, quote, Venus-like figure and glossy auburn hair. And the sons of many prominent families fell in love with her, much to the chagrin of the prominent families. But Lena wanted out. She saved her money to finally buy a train ticket to Butte, Montana. She would start fresh. But John Ross, a possessive lover, was not about to let her go. He followed her to Union Station and shot her 3 times before killing himself. How about a happy ending? Because they had those too. In 1900, Guy Duflot of No. 2 Electric Alley married Laura Grenier of No. 5 Electric Alley. The wedding was held in Bell London's parlor house. There was a wedding feast, a champagne toast, and then the couple was off to their honeymoon destination, which was Bell London's house on 2nd Street, a couple of miles up the road, where they eventually lived out their days happily ever after. Now let's head back through the alley to 25th Street. When you're back on the sidewalk, look up at the top of the next building on the street. You'll see it says London Ice Cream Parlor. Ring any bells? Yes, this was Bell London's Ice Cream Parlor, a marvelous front for the actual business, which was an entire kingdom out back. The next set of buildings are the oldest and the least disturbed buildings on 25th Street. As you walk along, you would have been passing the Territorial Cigar Factory, the Union Restaurant, the Ting Key Company, the Jones Sheraton Saloon, and the Frazzilli Brothers Saloon. So you've got Chinese, Irish, and Italian businesses all alongside each other here. And they were probably all equally sketchy as far as the law was concerned. The next building, if you look up, you'll see was called the Porter Block, 1898. It housed the William Kent Barber Shop and the Louis Weinberger Tailor Shop and the Lawrence Barsotti Candy Shop. So you got a British guy, German, and an Italian all operating businesses together. Now it houses the City Club, which has a world-class collection of Beatles memorabilia inside. If you're a Beatles fan, you'll definitely want to come back and check it out. Next door, at 268 and 270, was another building that was once 3 stories, but now it's just 1 because of a fire. It was the Lucky Tavern. And imagine him now. Eddie Doherty steps out the front door to survey the street. He's polished, polite, Mr. Upright Businessman in a suit. He first came here in 1943 on parole as an ex-con, and he became a local celebrity hailed by everyone, cops included, as the icon of rehabilitation. What none of them knew was that Eddie Doherty had a secret back room for gambling and racketeering in 3 different businesses on 25th Street. Slowly, they came to realize the truth, but each time the police raided a site, Eddie had been tipped off. And after breaking down the doors to the back rooms, the cops always found men just chilling, drinking nothing but beer, no signs of crime anywhere. In 1950, they finally got him on transporting stolen vehicles, and he went to federal prison. That year, 1950, was really the start of a completely new era for 25th Street. But more on that in a minute. The next building, 272, was built in 1888 and has lots of original features, fancy metal cornices and ornamental hoods over the square window bays. This was the Yanari and Tomono Pool Hall. Next door at 274 is a similar structure, also from 1888, in which J.W. Stevens had a photography shop. You know those Wild West old-timey photo shops where you can dress up with feather boas and bowler hats and rifles? Back then, this was one of those, but for real. The next building, 278, was also a photography shop. Notice the original stained glass on the windows. At 280 and 290, you'll see a two-story building with corbelled cornices that stretches all the way to the corner of the street. This has been many businesses over time, but originally, the schoolhouse stood here in the 1870s. So, tip your hat to the schoolmaster, Mr. William W. Burton, as you pass by. And maybe curtsy to Mrs. Frodsham, his assistant. And then look ahead to the next block, and cross that street when you get there. Over there, you'll notice that the architecture changes drastically. Back in the day, that block looked just like the blocks you've just come up. But now you see in front of you a giant block of 1960s blah. This is the Federal Building, housing local agents of the federal government. And it's right here, and it's very different for a reason. You know how Eddie Doherty was finally convicted and sent to federal prison in 1950? That marked the coming of a new era for Ogden. In the 50s, all over America, crusading policemen waged war on organized crime. Picture J. Edgar Hoover leading the FBI against gangsters nationwide. It was happening in Ogden, too. A showdown of epic proportions. It raged on 25th Street for a decade or so, as police and federal agents took down the bad guys one by one. But there were dirty cops, too. It was a showdown with heroes and villains on both sides. To symbolize the rebirth of Ogden, and to literally remove the sources of crime in the area, they bulldozed all the buildings on this block. They built this massive federal building in their place. And when it was done, this building was the epitome of modern, future-oriented architecture. They were making a statement about the future of the street. Nowadays, we're mostly devastated that they did that, destroying so much history on the street and building something so out of sync with its surroundings. But I get what they thought they were achieving at the time. Plus, in the 1950s and 60s, Victorian architecture wasn't cool and historic yet. They just thought it was old and run down and ugly. So they bulldozed old structures willy-nilly. But back in the 1800s, where the federal building is now, the Capitol Saloon was the site of a lot of drama. My favorite is a Wild West shootout between Pat Desmond and Thomas Todd in 1890. Pat Desmond ran a local resort that fronted a gambling den. He went bankrupt after his employee, Thomas Todd, betrayed him, or so he thought, and Pat Desmond had publicly declared that if Thomas Todd ever set foot in this town again, he would kill him. Well, Thomas Todd didn't leave town, and one winter's night, they came face to face at the Capitol Saloon. Pat Desmond's hand moved toward his pocket, as if reaching for a gun, and Thomas Todd shot him 5 times. If you head up to about the middle of the federal building, you're looking at the site of a famous hotel, which locals now lovingly call Murder Incorporated, Murder Inc. In 1916, the local paper shouted the news, "Murder ring unearthed here by police. Woman, leader of gang that sells human life for price of carousal." The newspapers claimed that Fanny Dawson was the leader of a murderous gang who lured unsuspecting visitors to her hotel. They'd get the visitors comfortable and then poison, shoot, or strangle them, steal their stuff, and dump their bodies somewhere on the street. In hindsight, it looks more like a splashy bit of drama cooked up by the newspaper. The paper pegged pretty much every unsolved crime in Ogden on Fanny Dawson and her murderous gang. But Fanny Dawson wasn't convicted of anything. She wasn't even put on trial. So either she was a brilliant criminal mastermind that the law could never touch, or that newspaper reporter was desperate for a juicy story. But either way, the thought of a murder ink on 25th Street really captured the public imagination, and so it remains. Now let's move over to the south side of the street. Go back to the corner at Grant Avenue and cross over 25th Street toward that park when you get the green light. As you cross the street, imagine stepping carefully over trolley lines, because for all of its heyday, 25th Street had an electric trolley going up and down the street and beyond. In fact, you could ride all the way up Ogden Canyon for a dose of the great outdoors before returning to your train if you wanted. Also imagine legions of soldiers during World War II parading down the street. It was government practice to have soldiers report here from all around. They'd give the boys one last grand feast at one of the restaurants on 25th, and then march them down the street to their train. People cheered and waved flags, sending America's boys off to war. Now on the south side of the street, you're standing at the corner of a park that you can see takes up most of this city block. Feel free to sit down here on the grass while I tell you about this spot. There was once a grand Victorian city hall in the center of this block, surrounded by gardens. It was a spectacular building, but alas, this too was torn down to build something symbolically new. The current city hall, that tall orange building you can see in the distance, it's a pretty impressive 12-story arts and crafts icon designed by our great local architect Leslie Hodgson in the 1940s. So here's the thing. This has been the site of City Hall from the beginning, and City Hall has always had a jail attached. See that shorter, yellowish building behind City Hall today? That's still the jail. And when the cops were cracking down on organized crime back in 1950, this is where they locked up the street's crime bosses until they were up for trial. One of the more famous inmates was another one of 25th Street's reigning madams. In the 1930s, Rose Davy ran a brothel on the south side of the street. I'll show you that in a minute. But I mention her here because in that crackdown by police in the 50s, Rose Davy was arrested and imprisoned here. She was a character. She loved the color pink. She had a pet ocelot. And she drove around town with it in her pink Cadillac. So when she was arrested, everybody knew about it. Fancy lady that she was permitted to leave her cell during the day and wander around the gardens here, like to stretch her legs and get some air. And while she was stretching her legs, she was actually still plying her trade in brief conversations with seeming strangers passing by. Even the police crusades couldn't stop it all. Let's go back down 25th Street now, this time on the south side. We'll be kind of picking up the pace now. Cross here, over Grant Avenue, and just head on down the next block a ways. This side of the street was too often the victim of the Crusaders' wrecking ball. You can see that with this first building here on your left. Built in place of the original Victorian structures, this housed the Greyhound bus station in the 1960s. Keep strolling on down the street till you get to the next building labeled Lyceum. This one wasn't wrecked. This is the old Lyceum Theater, built in the prairie style of Frank Lloyd Wright. This theater was a major destination for actors and musicians touring the United States. Teddy Roosevelt came here to give a speech during his 1912 campaign for the presidency. Picture him standing out front, smiling for the press and waving to the crowd. Inside, during its heyday, vaudeville performances drew large crowds, almost entirely men, who paid 75 cents for the good seats. But the theater's real money came from female box wrestlers, women who walked about peddling cigars and, of course, beer. One box wrestler, Lucia Watson, she was called before a court to testify as to whether she was also expected to sit on men's laps. Her reply? None of your business. The lawsuits and the inquiries make me think there was a lot more than basic entertainment happening here. In 1889, the city council enacted an ordinance to promote morality, and they banned female box wrestlers. Next, we'll head past a vacant lot, then a section of buildings to another empty lot, which is now a parking lot. So head on down, stopping at that parking lot. As you walk, back in the day, you would have been passing an amazing variety of shop fronts. Just the names of them really highlight for me how 25th Street was a melting pot. You would have constantly seen people from all walks of life with every kind of accent. Right here, you would have been walking past the Sam Waugh Laundry, which, you now know, probably offered more than laundry. Griffin Fruits and Produce. The Japanese Bazaar. Sing Lung Chinese Goods. The Carpenter's Hall. The ZCMI Granary, run by the Mormon Church. Eccles Lumber, operated by local millionaire David Eccles. And the Albert Mager Blacksmith Shop. The Abraham Siner Trunk Factory, owned by a prominent member of the Jewish community. The Griffin's Ogden Livery Stables. And the Li Wang Laundry. You get the idea? From east to west, from Europe and Asia, everybody's all here alongside each other on 25th Street. By now, you're probably in front of that parking lot, and you'll see a large historical plaque on the sidewalk. On one side, you can see some pretty interesting stuff about the Japanese influence on 25th Street, and on the other, if you're curious, there's a picture of Belle London and some highlights of the vices here. If you want to have a thorough look, pause the tour here. Otherwise, let's carry on. See that spectacular neon sign of a dragon a couple doors down? The one that says Historic 25th Street? Head toward that. It's actually a vintage sign from the Star Noodle Parlor that was once here, and it only escaped the wrecking ball through a local Save the Dragon campaign. Now it's restored to its original glory, and when it made its reappearance on 25th Street a couple years ago, it was a big cause for celebration. Most people don't know this, but Yesco, our local neon sign company, was the pioneer of neon signage in the 1940s. Founded by Tom Young, the company was building electric neon signs before anyone knew they would be the next big thing. No one knew, that is, until business owners in Las Vegas, Nevada heard about Tom Young and came calling. About half of all the neon signs in Vegas were built here by Yesco. This 9-foot dragon sign was built and then restored by that original family business we still claim as our own today. Carry on down the street past a few buildings until you're in front of that big orange brick building with Helena written across the upper floor. That was the Helena Hotel, built in 1910. You'll notice some interesting features in the prairie style, especially that horizontal brick bonding, classical cartouches, mosaic tile letters. Pretty cool. Next, the red brick building on the corner. In 1890, this was the Shamrock and Thistle Saloon, catering to the Irish and Scottish population that came here with the railroad. Classic Irish pub. But at the back of the building, it was always busy. This was actually the terminus of the Ogden-Salt Lake Railroad that Brigham Young had built after he devastatingly learned that the Transcontinental Railroad wasn't going to come through his capital of Salt Lake City. He had pulled every string he had to try to get the railroad to go through Salt Lake. But geography won out, and Ogden became the hub. Salt Lake City has never forgiven us. To try to ensure that Salt Lake didn't become completely obsolete, Young constructed a short railroad between his city and here, a sort of shuttle rail to keep Salt Lake City in the loop. It was actually the first rail line constructed without any federal dollars, paid for instead by the Mormon Church. So, if you were heading to Salt Lake, this is your stop. But by the 1930s and 40s, this was the site of the infamous Rose Rooms. Here upstairs was the brothel of Rose Davy, that woman who loved pink and drove a Cadillac and was imprisoned a block away in that crime crackdown. Legend says men would wait in long lines stretching down 25th Street on the sidewalk right here, waiting to get in. Now alleged, the club and bar, it pays homage to the building's history, even naming some of its cocktails after ladies who worked in the brothel. Okay, let's cross over the street to the final stretch of 25th Street. The wrecking ball was brutal here, as you can see, and most of the buildings are newer, constructed in a vaguely Victorian style. But there is one address on this block that was a magnet in its heyday for musicians from across America. Imagine, it's 2, 3 a.m. You thought the world would be sleeping this time of night, but instead a crowd is gathering down the street a ways. Follow your ears, and the excited 3 a.m. crowd, down to number 127. It'll be a long walk, about three-quarters of the way down. Everything you're walking past is now new. Almost the whole block was raised in the 60s and 70s. But until 1973, number 127, that was the home of the Porters and Waiters Club. In the early days, it was the boarding house for African-American railroad employees, the Porters and Waiters. It catered exclusively to black people during the years of segregation. And oh yes, there was illegal gambling in the back room here too. In 1947, Annabelle Weekly took over run of the place. She befriended saxophonist Joe McQueen, also newly arrived in Ogden, and together the two of them built Porters and Waiters into a famous jazz hotspot. All the jazz greats came here, and they came here usually late at night, after their official gigs, playing for wealthy white crowds in Salt Lake City. Those gigs ended, and they would hop on the train to Ogden, wake up Joe McQueen, and start a party. They'd get going around midnight, and by 3 a.m., the word was out, and the place was packed. Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Duke Ellington, Fats Domino all came to play with our own local jazz legend, Joe McQueen. Annabelle Weekly presided over Porters and Waiters for years and actually was pioneering racial integration. Joe McQueen says that when he first came to her in 1947 proposing a live jazz venue, her one requirement was that anyone be allowed inside. Annabelle Weekly was charismatic and savvy and bravely stood up to some dirty cops. She is one of our local heroes. If you're into jazz, then you probably already know about Joe McQueen. When this tour is over, you might like to visit a new mural on 27th Street and Washington Boulevard, featuring him and Annabelle Weekly, memorializing Ogden's jazz scene. Now continue down the street. Notice the architecture change. We're going back into the Victorian era again. As you walk, you would have been passing R.S. Brooks & Sons Livestock. They specialized in selling livestock by the carload or trainload. And next to them, at 119, Fred Cusley and Isaac Trusty, barbers. Look up at the tops of the buildings and find that brick building that says Established 1889 and head toward it. You can see that these last few buildings on the street were saved from the wrecking ball mostly by chance. Here in this building was the Senate Saloon and the Scudder Saloon. The building to the left was the Congress Building, also from 1889, also a hotel and saloon. Check out the brick construction on these buildings. Stamped metal pediments, segmented bays, Queen Anne windows, iron columns, paneled doors. This is classic Victorian commercial architecture from the late 1800s. Now check out the buildings to the right. Though they have different shop fronts, you can see if you look up to the second story that they're actually one building, all the way to the corner. Prime real estate again. From 1887 to 1904, this was the Windsor Hotel. And after 1904, it also included, I bet you can guess, beer, the George Murphy Saloon, and also the F.L. Smith Curiosity Shop. Let's head back across Wall Avenue now, back in front of Union Station where we started. For 75 years, America came through Ogden. Presidents, artists, soldiers, tycoons, immigrants from everywhere looking for their big chance. Every one of them stepped out of Union Station and took in this view. Some might look on 25th Street's rowdy past with disdain. The Salt Lake City-based newspaper, the Deseret News, once declared, "Bolder and more brazen dens of vice never existed in Sodom and Gomorrah." And maybe that wasn't too far off. But in Ogden today, we look back at our history with amazement and pride. It wasn't a perfect place, that's for sure. But as you've seen, it was the nexus of a surprisingly global story, notorious in its wildness, relentlessly free. Ogden embodied the myth of the American West, its rebel spirit, its incredible diversity, created an untamable spirit that Ogdenites still embrace today. Well, there you are. Now you know how cool this place is. Now go out there and explore our city. If you enjoyed this tour, try our tour of Union Station. This tour was brought to you by What's Her Name Podcast, telling the stories of fascinating women you've never heard of. You might enjoy our episode, The Girl of Iron, featuring Mary Ibsen and the story of the Wedding of the Rails at Golden Spike in 1869. This tour was also brought to you by the Weber County Heritage Foundation, working to preserve our county's historic legacy since 1978. Consider joining us and get more involved in historic preservation, education, and advocacy. WeberCountyHeritageFoundation.com. Special thanks to Sarah Singh at Weber State University Special Collections, who provided information about some of 25th Street's lively characters and also a starting framework for the tour, originally compiled by Richard Roberts. Our audio editor was Daniel Foster Smith, who also composed some of the music for the tour. Other songs were generously shared with us by the New Hot Five from their album Jazz for Cows, and Andy Reiner and John Souza from their album Canyon Sunrise. You can find links to their stuff where you found this tour. Partial funding for this tour was provided by a Weber County RAMP grant. Thank you for listening.